You are listening to the Cycling Podcast Femina with Orla Shenoy, Rose Manley and Richard Moore.
Orla, what exactly are you doing there?
I don't honestly know, actually. I just had a memory of a mind trick that we used to do as kids where you cross your fingers and then you rub your nose with your fingers, but then it feels like you're touching your nose with one finger and it's actually the other. But I can't remember which finger it's supposed to be and what it's supposed to feel like. But I find that when I cross my fingers and rub my nose up and down along the bridge of it with your middle finger, it feels like it should be your first finger, but your first finger isn't touching anything. So it feels like you've lost sensation in
your
first finger.
Is this working in audio?
That's what I was doing, but I don't know why.
Welcome to February's episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina. I'm Richard Moore with Orla Shenoy.
Good morning. Hello.
And Rose Manley.
I'm just...
Are you bemused, Rose?
I'm just in a state of shock. I just don't know what is going on. There was that. There's something about the moons are affecting Orla's computer or something.
I feel like the moons are giving off a weird vibe right now. Not the moons, the main moon. I feel like there's a weird energy
moon.
In the air.
The main moon.
Yeah.
Orla's in a funny mood, isn't she?
So, yeah.
It could be the 6 coffees I've had this morning and the fact that I've been dealing with a fluey daughter, I'm not sure, but there's something weird going on, people. I can't guarantee where this podcast is going to take us today, but it should be a fun ride.
we're going to hear from a few riders in this episode, including Hannah Barnes towards the end, and a bit of Leanne Lippert as well, who started the season very strongly indeed. And the racing is in full swing now, isn't it? I think when we last recorded last month, the Tour Down Under was just getting underway, but there's been quite a lot of racing, including the first Women's World Tour race, the Cadel Evans Great Ocean Road Race. First Women's World Tour race, new look Women's World Tour, of course, with things like live TV coverage guaranteed.
Yeah, not
ironically
quite guaranteed.
The bad weather meant that the TV pictures were disrupted. Not a great start, was it?
I think it was Robbie McEwen with a phone on
an
a
iPhone.
Motorbike or something, wasn't it?
Do you know, I wonder, does this create a perfect get out clause for any race that doesn't really want to do
fake
live television coverage? I'm sorry, extreme normal weather on the way. There's something in
yeah,
the moons.
Exactly.
I don't understand what it is, but there's a negative energy and we can't broadcast live. That's what I would do.
Well, we did see a few pictures from that race. But can you give us a news roundup, Orla? Tell us what else has been going on. We're going to do this jazz freeform news roundup. We can chip in.
You can be practicing that. That's really good.
I wouldn't.
That's
go that
really
far.
Good. Anyway, feel free to interject with air trumpet or jazzy drums, whenever you like. The Women's Tour Down Under had indeed gotten underway whenever we did our last episode. It was one by Ruth Winder of Trek Segafredo. She won the overall for the first time in her career. Leanne Lippert of Sunweb finished second. Amanda Spratt of Mitchelton Scott in third. And Winder took a stage en route to her win, which again, she's never done before, with other stages won by Chloe Hosking, Amanda Spratt and Simona Fraporti of Be Pink. The Cadel Evans Women's Race, as you say, Richard, was the first World Tour race of the new look era. Leanne Lippert took the biggest win of her career, and that was her first World Tour win as well. With a solo attack around the finishing circuit, defending champion Arlena Sierra of Astana finished second, with Australian champion Amanda Spratt up there once again in third. Now, there was a crash in that race that took out several Mitchelton Scott riders who would have been essential to Lucy Kennedy's defence of her Herald Sun Tour title. They drafted in a few others, and on the first day of the Herald Sun Tour, it wasn't looking great for Kennedy. Arlena Sierra took stage one for Astana, with Kennedy finishing 16th on that stage. And then stage two was won by 21-year-old Ella Harris of New Zealand, who beat Sarah Gigante at the line. It was a hilltop finish. The course was shortened due to the threat of extreme weather. But Kennedy won the overall in the end, defending her title despite the change in lineup. And then quickly across from that, you look like you're going to interject in a freeform jazz style way.
No, well,
Richard.
I mean, I watched quite a lot of that racing, and Ella Harris, Kanya SRAM, 21-year-old, she's one of the four riders who's come through the Zwift Academy. This is her second year with the team. And as you say, she won ahead of Sarah Gigante, who we heard from in last month's episode. You spoke to, you know, a 21-year-old and a 19-year-old. That's pretty extraordinary. Okay, this Herald Sun Tour isn't isn't Women's World Tour level, but it was you know, quite a strong field and a hard race. And Leanne Lippert as well, 22. You said it was her first World Tour win, and it was, because, of course, she was second, wasn't she, to Kasia Niviadoma at Burton Dasset, hilltop finish there. But she took the leader's jersey. And, well, it was clear that day, her talent. It was also a day of terrible weather, of course, so maybe she's good in those sorts of conditions. I don't know. She did say after the Cadell Evans race that she is from Northern Europe, so it didn't bother her, and in fact her whole team. But the other interesting thing about that is we talked about her team, Sunweb, last episode, and appearing to be slightly rudderless, maybe, or not having a very clear focal point, but she could be it. You did speak to her at the team launch, of course, didn't you, Orla?
Yeah, I did. She was one of three riders I spoke to, and yeah, I think that's probably a fair assessment. I mean, she seemed very optimistic about the season ahead. She has had a cracking season already, second at the Tour Down Under, as we said. She won the Young Rider classification there, as well as the Mountains, came second in the sprints. And in that team, you would think that Corin Rivera would have been the lead rider, really, much more experienced and an awful lot of success. The last few years have seen her win the Prudential Ride London Classic, American National Champs, the Women's Tour, Tour of Flanders. But then last year, probably quite disappointing, really, by her standards. So whenever I went to the launch, I think a lot of the focus still would have been on Corin Rivera. And it seems harsh that we're only not even just a couple of races in, and already we're saying that Leanne Lippert could be the hope instead, but certainly she's a decent option.
Let's give Corin Rivera a chance to race before writing her off, shall we?
Well, I just mean as in it's good for the team to have such a strong option so soon in the season. But I grabbed a quick few words with Lippert at the launch, and here's what she had to say. Leanne, a brilliant 2019 for you, the Women's Tour in particular, a fantastic performance there. How do you look back on the season that's just been?
Yeah, the Women's Tour was for sure a big highlight for me in my season. Yeah, the second place was awesome. In general, my season, yeah, I had really some good races, but also some bad luck with injuries and yeah, being sick and not being able to do some races. I really wanted to be good. But yeah, the races I was in shape. I could really show that I made another step, especially in the Women's Tour. And yeah, looking forward to the next year.
Did that feel like a bit of a breakthrough race for you in a way? You're saying about, you know, performing at the Women's World Tour. I mean, you've had incredible results in your career in the past, Junior Europeans. But did it feel like an extra step up, do you think?
Yeah, when I realised that I became second and it's my first World Tour podium, I was really feeling like, yeah, it's another step. And also when I see who else was riding there and I could do it on an uphill finish, yeah, it was really another step, I think.
So that was Leanne Lippert then talking at the Sunweb launch, which was just before Christmas, wasn't it? I think now. It's all a bit of a blur. But away from the road, we had the World Cyclocross Championships. Marianne Vos had ruled herself out of that one to have an operation. And it was won by Celine del Carmen Alvarado, the 21-year-old who decided to forgo her chances in the under-23 category. She had finished second and then last year third in the under-23s. And she'd said she wanted to vengeance for coming third last year, but decided after winning the Dutch championships a few weeks ago that actually she was going to throw her hat into the elite ring, and it paid off. A phenomenal win by her, gutsy all or nothing move, and it came down to a Dutch sprint finish with Anne-Marie Voorst finishing in second and Lucinda Brand in third.
It was incredible, that race, actually, because by the very first corner it was pretty much a Dutch championship race. Because
remember,
it was
the old Tango ads.
You know, yeah,
you've been tangled. Watching women's cyclocross is a little bit like that. It's just a blur of orange at the front.
Yeah, so much. But I mean, it was kind of, so it was like four Dutch riders, and then it became the three Dutch riders that ended up on the podium. But it was an incredible race. Just, you know, riders dropping back, coming back. Lucinda Brand was just incredible, relentlessly coming back. I mean, Alvarado came back several times, and yeah, what a finish, a great race. And what a young talent to see. I wonder if, I'd be interested to find out if she was going to ever consider in coming onto the road. I know it's very early days, but
she had a lot of spills and kind of, you know, took a lot. It looked to me like she took a lot of wrong lines and came off a couple of times. And they all kind of had that. It was very slippy, obviously, but it was surprising to see her still in contention. Because I remember last year, it was just a mistake by Lucinda Brand that really cost her the chance of maybe winning, but she seemed to be able to compensate for those mistakes with a I guess just sheer strength in the end. Very impressive indeed. She writes for the same professional team as Matthew Vanderpool, opposite in Phoenix.
And it's interesting as well, you say, Richard, that watching any women's race these days is like watching an old tango ad, because you've got Alvarado then. I read an interview with her before the Worlds, and she was saying how Marianne Vos was her role model growing up, obviously another Dutch rider dominating cyclocross. And now there she is coming to the fore, another role model for incredibly young Dutch riders. And it just feels like this is a never-ending factory of inspiration and delivering on promise that doesn't seem to be coming to an end anytime soon. So I need to get my daughter's Dutch nationality sorted, basically.
She'd have a much better chance of making another nation's national team, I would have thought. Keep her Irish.
Excuse me. You haven't seen her ride cyclocross yet. Neither have I, because she hasn't. But
what can you tell us about the new world champion, though, Rose? I think you've been looking into her backstory a little bit.
You landed me in it there, Richard. Well, Orla was actually, before we started recording, telling us a bit about the article, the interview that she had read with her. I mean, the thing that I think is most remarkable is that she was actually born in the Dominican Republic. And Orla, you said that she came over when she was about 5 to the Netherlands, is that right?
Yeah, she moved to Rotterdam when she was 5, so she doesn't remember much, apparently, about her time in the Dominican Republic.
But I have noticed that she does all her interviews in English and Spanish, and presumably Dutch. I mean, obviously, I don't ever watch the... Well, I don't watch the Spanish ones either, or the Dutch ones, but presumably she does them in Dutch as well, obviously.
Yeah, her mother is the Spanish influence. Apparently her mother speaks to her in Spanish at home.
Oh, there we go. But yeah, she's had a lot of this season, actually, in the World Cup. She narrowly missed out on getting the World Cup, which the title went to Anne-Marie Vorst, but only because of a slip-up right in the last race of the season. But actually... Alvarado has actually been scoring a lot more kind of podium places, second places all season than she has wins. So this is going to, she'll be really relishing this world championship victory.
It's a really interesting family setup she has as well. She's been riding cyclocross for 10 years already. And her father apparently drives to races. He's the mechanic. Her mum massages and does the soigneur duties. Her younger brother is also a cyclocross rider. Her sister isn't. But she's been riding and been fairly successful in races for a long time now. She often finished in sort of the top 10, but never really winning until I think the first time she properly came to attention, the university cross championships in 2019. She's won, you know, under 23s, a European and whatnot, but she's also a committed Christian. She's a big believer, and I think that's a big part of her background. It forms a big part of her identity and I guess the relationship with her family. She's a really, really interesting character. In this interview as well, they were talking about her feminism, and she was saying how she wants to be a role model for all young girls. And in her mind, and I love the simplicity of this because it's absolutely true, she says she's a feminist just because she believes in equality. Nothing more than that. She says we do the same work, we put in the same effort, we make the same sacrifices as the men. So why do we get to a certain level and not get the same money? It's not about the money. I just believe in equality. Amen. And sister. So yeah, really, really interesting character.
Let's hear from her, shall we? Celine Del Carmen Alvarado.
Well, Celine, congratulations on your world title. It's a few days since you won. Has it sunk in what you achieved?
Thanks. Well, it hasn't really sunk in yet, to be honest. It's still like I'm in cloud nine, you know, dreaming about it. Meanwhile, it's certainly real, but I think it will come quickly.
Have you been reliving the race? Have you been watching the race back? Because conditions were quite treacherous, and you and a lot of the other riders had problems. Were there moments on that final lap in particular where you felt it was maybe literally slipping away from you?
Yeah, well, I watched it, I think, twice, the whole race, and the sprint I watched like 100 times. Because it was a very, very close, tight battle. During the race, yeah, I think the penultimate lap, I was thinking like it's going to be a hard end and maybe it's not going to be my race this time. But during the last lap, I felt better, and I also noticed that the other competitors were getting tired and making also mistakes. So that's when I thought that my chances were even as the other ones.
I mean, you'd been upset and disappointed the previous week. Did that really fire you up for the world title race?
Yes, definitely. A disappointment that day. I could, give it a place real quickly, actually. But I was certainly very motivated afterwards to do even better during the Worlds. And that really, that helped me somehow.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Because you were born in the Dominican Republic, moved to Holland, I think, when you were five. How did you become a cyclist? What got you into cycling and cyclocross in particular?
Well, I started cycling, I think, when I was nine on the road. I was first a road cyclist, and then actually to just, going on during winter and to keep shape. I was searching for something to do, and then came at cyclocross through asking people. And then I think a year later I was doing both, so road cycling and cyclocross the discipline, and that's how it actually started. Not even as a serious thing, but just to get through the winter.
And I guess it's become a far more serious thing for you now. You're a member of the Alps and Phoenix team, the same as Matthew Vanderpoel. Do you see is your focus going to remain on cyclocross? Are you going to try some more road races as well?
Well, for now my focus is still on cyclocross, but we are going to do also with the team some road races. So we're going to set up a UCI road team with the girls we have, and I also do mountain biking, and my goal is to be an Olympic rider during the Olympic Games in Paris. So that will be it on with a mountain bike. And I think there are many possibilities on the road, but for now that's just exploring, and not really like a main goal next to cyclocross.
We have an important addendum to the news roundup that came in after we recorded the episode, and that is that Bowles Dolmans have secured a new title sponsor, meaning the number one team in the world will continue. SD Works, a human resources provider, has signed on as a new title sponsor for 4 years from next year. The team will become known as SD Works Cycling Team, and they also come on board early as a co-sponsor for the rest of this season. So I gave team manager Danny Stamm a call to ask him about the news. So for those who haven't had the chance to read very much about the detail of the new sponsorship, what does it involve exactly?
Well, it's the new main sponsor, so it's the title sponsor for 21, 22, 23 and 24. Yeah, actually they also start in already this year as a co-sponsor for the team for 2020. And yeah, the goal is that we're going to be in the World Tour League as well. So yeah, we'd be pretty happy that we have a future now from 4 years. And that we can continue. It's actually almost 5 years already, because if you see this year, we have a guarantee for 5 years now.
Was it a difficult process to get a new title sponsor? Was it relatively straightforward? How did it work out?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not easy to find a sponsor, because you're always looking for longer terms. And we find out that a lot of companies are interested, but not for a sequel from 4 years, because there's a lot of money involved with it. So it wasn't that easy. We actually want to try to stay independent to women's team. That was actually a little bit of a call from us. And yeah, that makes it not easier.
Why was it that you wanted to remain an independent women's team? Why was that so important to you?
Well, I think in the anticipation on this time, you can actually really see that a lot of teams are going with men teams, what is nice and what is also good, but we actually really wanted to focus only on a women team.
And were you only interested in a 4-year sponsorship deal then? Would anything less than that not have been enough, given that they were the requirements to become a women's World Tour team?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a little bit the point. If you want to stay on the highest level, then you need a license for 3 or 4 years now. And yeah, that was one of the main reasons that we're looking for longer terms.
So what will this allow you to do now then, Danny? Does this allow you to maintain the team operating at the level that you've had? Does it allow you to think about growth? What does the future of the team look like now?
Well, I think we definitely want to try to stay on the level where we are now. And in the future, we want to grow to a bigger team. And probably, we're looking also to try to do some cyclocrossing in the team. So you definitely want to grow the team a little bit bigger. But yeah, we also want to stay on the quality what we have now.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for supporting the cycling podcast. You can still get 25% off all your Science and Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code
SISCP25. Oh my God, when are we gonna just give it up? When?
It's so difficult. I think maybe next time I see you all, we should just record it together.
Just play it in. Brilliant.
That's what I find it actually like vaguely distressing having to like do it on a delay.
I'm quite sure the listeners find it more than vaguely distressing, to be honest. Maybe we just stop.
As long as no, I understand it's SISCP25.
People love it. A few people in our end of year survey, a few people mentioned it.
No.
They're the people that enjoy it, three of them.
Oh, dear.
And they asked that we do something similar in the other podcast, maybe get Daniel.
I can really see Daniel or you,
Daniel
or Lionel.
Yeah. What a chorus. Yeah.
I see less praise for us, and I see more just kind of people griping at Lionel for not doing enough.
Yeah, I don't want to bring out the football fan in Lionel. That's always a bit dangerous.
Try it, Daniel, though. There's a search for you. Find the football fan. Well, he is obviously a football fan, but not of the terrorist variety.
No. If you missed that, it was SISCP25 at scienceandsport.com for all your Science and Sport products. And the more you use that code and stock up with Science and Sport products, the more you help the podcast as well. So you're supporting the podcast as well as your own rides by being a customer of Science and Sport. And we're very grateful to them for their continued support. Now, Orla, we're going to get a little update on the Cyclist Alliance, I believe, because some changes there. But just a couple of things I wanted to mention that have been in the media. We talked last month about Annemiek van Vleuten and her training that she's been doing with the male riders on Michelin Scott. And they released a short kind of film showing some of that, the background to, you know, how that came about and the work that she does on those training camps. You'll find that on YouTube and on Michelin Scott's channels. It's a really interesting watch, and you do get a sense, they interview a lot of the male riders, Chris Yule Jensen and others, and Jack Haig and people like that. You do get a real sense of the hours that she puts in and the work that she does and the routine that they have on these training camps. I mean, they do place-to-place training camps, so can't take a shortcut, you know, so she's spending hours every day on the bike, and I think one ride they did was like 8 hours long. So she's, you know, it's obviously working well for her. I'm not sure it would work for everybody. We'll have an interview with Hannah Barnes a bit later on where she talks about going the other way with her training, cutting down on the hours and doing more kind of intensive quality work. So but it works for her, and I think we're hoping to have an interview with her coach in a future episode of the Cycling Podcast Femina. Another thing I just want to mention quickly was an interview in Soigneur with Marianne Vos. Really tremendously revealing interview, I felt. Sort of asking her very kind of basic questions about who is Marianne Vos and what makes her tick, and it was really, really worth a read. So that's in English. It's a Dutch publication, Soigneur, isn't it? But they published the interview in English, and it's well worth a read if you want to look that up.
And Marianne Vos is back on, not quite back on a bike, but she's back on a weird elliptical. What is that thing? It's like a cross trainer that moves up a hill.
Yeah, the elliptical trainer. Yeah, so like it's in the gym, it's called a cross trainer often, isn't it?
So I've seen her climbing up. She still climbs mountains even when she can't ride a bike. So going up one of those on an elliptical trainer. So she is.
You know what,
ready.
Though? I think that she's had this operation and missed the cyclocross season. I think this could be the best thing that, assuming she returns to full fitness and health, it could be a very good thing for her to have missed the cyclocross season, frankly, because previously, a few years ago, she did suffer burnout after many years of road cyclocross, and a bit of track as well. You know, that enforced rest might just mean that when she does come back, she's she's as ferocious a competitor and as fit as ever.
Yeah, but then again, she's actually done very well out of doing, when she wasn't burnt out, she's done pretty well out of doing that. So maybe that, you know, being that kind of intense all year round is maybe what her body needs. It's difficult, isn't it? It's like, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But then it'll be interesting to see if it does have some benefits, actually.
Well, it's a big year, isn't it, with the Olympics? And that's going to be a big target for a lot of the riders. So guaranteed, whichever rider wins the Olympics, that was how to do it.
Yeah.
And we'll all be wise to the fact in hindsight. Until then, all options are open. But yeah, come Tokyo, we'll have known all along what the best approach to the season
was. And then we can just clip up your little quote there about being...
Yeah, definitely, definitely. We're all wise after the event, aren't we?
But yes.
You know, I mean, look up that interview. It's very a kind of softer side of Marina Voss, because I think we see her as just this cycling machine, and this is far more about her as a person, and talks a bit about her personal life as well. So really interesting. The Cyclists Alliance, there's a lot of big Dutch influence in that, and I think you've got a bit of an update on what's happening. Well, tell us what the Cyclists Alliance is, first of all, Orla.
Well, it's essentially a union for female riders. It came about with Iris Lappendel, Carmen Small and Gracie Alvin deciding to try to put something together to protect women's riders better, female riders better, make the job a safer job, a safer environment in all senses, financially, emotionally, you know, in terms of contracts, etc. And they've been going just over 2 years now. They started with a rider survey in 2016, then they launched at the end of 2017. To my mind, they've done phenomenal work in the short amount of time that they've been in existence. And it's a credit to the personalities and the dedication of the people involved. You know, when we talk about, we saw that sort of wave of Me Too coverage, that's come about, I think, entirely because of the confidence that Iris in particular has given to these riders and the connections that she's been able to make for them. A lot of the changes in the Women's World Tour for this year, I feel have come off the back of the pressure that they have brought to bear. So already I think they've done a great job, and now they are relaunching. So I think this comes out just before the relaunch, but Iris has said she's happy for me to chat about it. And so what they're doing is they've got a grant of €75,000 from the RAFA Foundation over the next 3 years. They put together a whole plan to bring to the RAFA Foundation, and they're going to use that money to consolidate what they've done and to add to the services that they can offer to riders. So, you know, in terms of headlines, it's a bit unsexy, but it's the fundamental work that is needed to make the environment better for female riders. So they are adding to and have added to their personnel already. They now have someone to run the day-to-day admin, which Iris has been doing by herself. They have their own ethics ombudsman, which is fantastic. And it's someone really to guide riders through the legal minefield, tell them what recourse they have for any issues that they might have, and be a support really when it comes to taking anything to the UCI. They don't have any teeth to prosecute or to take action against anyone, but it's advisory as much as anything else. They have a new rider council, which they started last September, and the council voted for their rider representatives. That's Ashley Millman-Passio. She now sits on the board of the Cyclists Alliance. And they have a new vice director on the board, which is Rhianne Ravenscroft, who I know personally. She's a good friend of mine. And when Iris said that she wanted to talk to Rhianne about coming on board, I was so enthused and relieved that they were looking at that caliber of person. She's a lawyer for the US-based bond trading platform Market Access. She's a total doer. Like, you give anything to Rhianne to do, she will do it. And she's passionate about women's cycling, passionate about making the environment better, you know, getting equal pay, having our riders protected. And so she's a fantastic, in my mind, asset to the Cyclists Alliance. So I caught up with her recently and just asked her about the changes in the Cyclists Alliance and exactly what they're going to do and what their ultimate ambition is. So here she is, Rhianne Ravenscroft.
So what we did is we really pinned it down, like, what were we trying to achieve with the TCA? What was Iris's dream? Why did they start this? And what we pinned it down to is actually we wanted to be able to say, and we wanted the riders in the peloton to be able to say, all of us, 100% of us women in cycling, feel like we have a safe and stable working environment, which really isn't that much to ask for and should be the norm in all sports and not all industries. And we have a few key principles that we'll really be working on over the next year to try and push for and drive for. the things that we think will give everybody that opportunity to have a safe and stable working environment. So we think all riders should have a minimum salary, all riders should receive maternity leave, all racing and training expenses covered, paid vacation days, professionalisation of support team members, and then I think as a standard, all riders should receive life insurance, and just taking a universal, a standardised approach to race safety. And all of these things collectively will push forward women's cycling, push forward into professionalisation and help the riders feel safe in the environment they work and train in.
I mean, when you read those things out, anyone who works in any kind of an environment, certainly a corporate environment or if you have a staff job, whatever, they seem so basic. They seem so necessary. How far away are we, do you think, from that being a reality in professional women's cycling?
At the moment, it's surprising when you look at the statistics. So 61% of women in cycling earn under £15,000 a year from the TCA survey results. 52% of those had to reimburse travel expenses over the course of the year out of that minimum salary, which is below minimum wage in a lot of European countries. So I think there's still a lot to be done. We need to professionalise it. We need to professionalise cycling and we need investment in it for that to happen. But it's not unachievable.
You've been passionate about cycling for a long time. You work in the corporate world. Coming into this from that background, have you been surprised by the state of women's cycling in any way? Have you been pleasantly surprised, negatively surprised? What has been your initial impressions in the 4 years you've been in the board, 4 months you've been in the board of the TCA?
I'm pleasantly surprised, definitely, although it shouldn't really be a surprise, is the incredible passion and the women that are involved in it and the energy they have to make change. I mean, there's some amazing women working in and around cycling, and these are the people that will drive change. I was shocked by some of the statistics when I read the TCA survey, which we released last year, and I thought I knew and had quite a good idea of what it was to work in a male-dominated industry, and that took me by surprise. I think everybody should go and have a look at that survey, anyone who's a fan of cycling, and see how you can support it as it is.
So how can people support it, I guess, is a big question. Anyone listening to this is not necessarily a professional cyclist. Why should they care? And if they do care, how can they get on board?
So we're launching as well a new supporter membership at the moment, and that kind of links back to what I was speaking about earlier, that we'd like all the riders to be able to stand on our shoulders so that we can push for change. Even if you're not interested in professional cycling, you've got to recognise that this is a huge power imbalance in an industry which needs to be changed. I mean, 6 in 10 sports fans in the UK want to see more female sports on TV, so there is a demand there, but the only way we can do that is getting behind people and pushing for it and arguing for change. You don't have to be a cyclist to think that that's a good and just and fair way to be.
So they'll be able to go on the website, have a look and see how they can support then.
Yeah. So we have a supporter membership, so it's €35 and you get a TCA cap.
I like a cap.
Yeah, you can ride that, wear that anytime. And social media badge, and you just know that the money that's being used is going to support the TCA, help with the provision of services towards the riders. At the moment, like I said, and everybody who's assisting does it on a pro bono basis. So it's just contributing to increasing the services for the riders, and the more we can do that, the better we can push for change.
So I guess in a way then, in terms of the wider public and wider sporting fans, you're trying to visibly create a kind of a tribe, I guess, in terms of being able to wear that cap, be able to have that badge.
Yeah, I think so. And if you can wear your cap and wear it with pride and say, do you know what, I don't believe that we should keep things the way they are. I believe in equality in sport and I want to support these women. I mean, they're incredible athletes, racing and training year in, year out. And yeah, I think you're right, creating a bit of a tribal feeling about it and for people to understand and show some solidarity with the riders who perhaps don't realise the extent of the power imbalance in their own industry because they're simply doing what they love. So I think, yeah, we should get all behind them and push for change.
I'm Lizzie Banks, co-presenter of Service Course, the cycling podcast's monthly tech show. The tech show that is so much more than a tech show. Each month, Tom Wally and I delve into a different topic, getting insight from engineers and brands behind emerging tech, as well as hearing what the pro peloton really think about their and their opponent's tech. Make sure you never miss an episode by hitting subscribe on your podcast platform now.
So just before that ad for the Service Course, we heard from Rhianne Ravenscroft, who's the new Vice Director on the board of the Cyclists Alliance. As I said earlier, they are relaunching. And when I spoke to Iris on the phone earlier this week just to get a feel for what it is they're doing, she said that their ambition really is to make it so that everyone, every parent can say of their daughter, here is a career for you. You can have a career in cycling. It's a safe sport. It's a good environment. It's well paid. And that is their ultimate aim. And so they want to do that across all disciplines, whether it's road, and that's not just road for the women's tour, it's also for the continental teams, track, mountain bike, cross, every discipline, every rider, just to make it a safe, stable environment for female riders. And really, speaking to these women on a regular basis, I believe that they can do it. It takes the right personalities, it takes the right level of dedication and the right focus, and they have it. And I think cycling is in very good hands with them putting pressure on the UCI at the minute.
Well, a rider who hasn't started her season yet is Hannah Barnes. She starts at Het Nieuwsblad in, the end of February, so in a couple of weeks. And she's a CanyonSRAM rider. I caught up with her this week. She was in Girona, where she spent a lot of the winter training. I think between Girona and Andorra, she's been pretty much at home and getting the miles in, or perhaps getting fewer miles in, because she's working with a new coach, John Baker, who used to work for Dimension Data. He's a British coach based in Italy. And I think that's been going well for her. She says that for the first time in a few years, she feels like she's made progress or made improvements. And I think she felt that she has plateaued a little bit the last couple of years. So I caught up with her, find out what she's been up to and what 2020 holds for her. You were saying you've got a new coach. When did you start working with him, and how did that change come about?
So we started working in July. Kind of, you couldn't really do much while the season was still going, really. It was hard to make any changes and differences. But yeah, I feel like we focused this winter on specific areas that were my weaknesses that I needed to work on. And I feel now, especially in the last 2 and 3 weeks, I've really seen a positive change, which is nice. It's been a few years now since I've been able to really see any progress, so I'm pretty happy with that.
I mean, did you feel that, and was that a motivating factor in changing coach? Did you feel that you'd maybe plateaued a bit and you needed to do something a little bit different?
For me personally, I was just too friendly with my old coach. It was just, I kind of was able to kind of manipulate what I wanted to do and the sessions that I enjoy and whatnot. And I needed someone that would not scare me, but was quite strict on me. I'm a sucker for doing a little bit too much or more than I should be. So I needed someone to kind of control me a little bit. And I think, yeah, for me, it was more the resting side of what I needed to do. No one needs to go out and tell me to go and ride 4 or 5 hours, because I'll happily do that. It's more the sit on the sofa that I need to get better at.
Is it exciting to work with someone new, almost like sort of baking a cake with a new recipe? You're sort of excited to see what the results might be.
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, it's, you don't want to put too much pressure on yourself and like, oh yeah, I'm feeling really good. But yeah, I'm pretty excited to get racing now. And you know that you've put all the hard work in over the last 3 months to be the best you can be. So, and I think this year especially is a year that I really need to target and do well in. So I'm hoping I can do that.
Well, it's an Olympic year, of course. Are the Olympics a target for you this year? And if so, or if not, what else are the big goals for you this year?
Yeah, I think the Olympics is probably a big target for a lot of people. And I think a lot of people have different aims for the Olympics. Some people are going there to kind of have a good season and possibly medal. But for me, I went there in July, and I really like the courses that are out there, and I'd like to go. But I mean, I have to look at it. It's not the be all and end all. It's just a stepping stone, really, in the season. So yeah, there's a few targets for me that I'd like to focus on. I just want to have races and a season that I can be proud of and look back on and just, yeah, be happy with how it went.
And not too many big changes in your team among the riders, but quite an interesting change in the coaching staff, or the DS staff, with Rolf Aldag coming on board. Do you know him at all? Have you got to meet him already?
Yeah, we had a 2-week training camp in December in Malaga, which is a really nice time to meet him. Meet any member of staff when a new rider comes to the team, because it's very relaxed. It's just long miles, and Rolf came on a few of those with us, which was nice. I think it's a really good way to meet people and get to know them really well is on the bike. So yeah, I think everyone's really happy with Rolf coming in, and we know that he's not gonna take any rubbish really, and yeah, he'll want us to, if something goes well, he'll let us know, but in the other sense he'll let us know if something's going bad, and not hesitate to be harsh with us, I think. But yeah, I think that's kind of something that you need, someone to be really motivating in the meetings beforehand and on the radio, and yeah, I think everyone's really looking forward to it.
Well, that was Hannah Barnes. Her team, Canyon SRAM, off the mark, of course, with Ella Harris winning at the Herald Sun Tour. But I guess a big change for them this year is off the bike, with Rolf Aldag coming on board as the new sports director. He was at Dimension Data. Before that, was at HTC High Road, well, Quick Step, and then HTC High Road. And that will be interesting to see his impact, I think. Yeah, as I say, it's a team in terms of rider personnel, not too many changes.
No, they don't often have many changes, actually, Canyon SRAM. Over the years, they keep the same almost completely the same team, and they might have one addition which would come from, say, the Zwift Academy, which is, you know, their Zwift-based competition to get a pro contract they have every year, which is where Ella Harris came from. But I kind of started thinking last year that Canyon SRAM was becoming a bit like EF Education first used to be, where it was kind of, everyone looks very picturesque and they, you know, make really nice Instagram pictures, but they don't seem to do much on the bike, and they don't certainly kind of reach the potential that, when you see this list of riders that Canyon SRAM have, they don't seem to reach that potential. And I think a lot of the time when you see them race, kind of Kasia Niewiadoma, well, in past years has been kind of left to fend for herself a bit, and you know, they haven't been the powerhouse team that you see, like Bowles Dolmans control the race, Mitchelton Scott control the race, these kind of teams who work much more with a team strategy. So it'll be really interesting to see what Rolf Aldag can bring to it. I think clearly there have been a few changes already. The fact that Ella Harris could go for the win and has already won this season, I think, is a good sign that perhaps the responsibility to win on the team doesn't just lie with Kasia Niewiadoma, because they have a lot of, right? I mean, Hannah Barnes herself, as a junior, was you know, incredible rider, and people were tipping her for huge greatness. But I wonder if now that she's got this new trainer, that she could perhaps fulfil a bit more of that potential. Or, you know, something that I think would help the team is if everyone had a bit more of a clear role, because there's a lot of riders there who, like Elena Cecchini, who can win, but probably in every single race is not going to be going for the win. So I think maybe a bit more strategy, which might be what Rolf Aldag brings to it, might see huge improvements.
Alice Barnes as well probably falls into a similar category. You know, she has at times looked, you know, when she was at Drop, she looked as though she was going to go on to great things, because she's got a good finish, and you thought she's the rider who could win races. And she hasn't really pushed on at Canyon SRAM, I don't feel. She won the British title last year. And Hannah Barnes as well perhaps hasn't pushed on at that team as much as she would have hoped. And they have been pretty reliant on Kasia Niewiadoma, who is still very young, remember, and still improving, I think.
But then winning tends to be contagious anyway, doesn't it? So starting the season with a win for Ella Harris is a great kickstart to the season. The more winners you have, the more I think other riders on the team feel that they can win as well. You know, when you look at maybe what Canyon SRAM have lacked slightly, that the likes of Bowles Dolmans, as you referred to, Rose, have had, is that on Bowles, you've got competition for amongst the team for who is even going for the race win on the team. And I think Canyon SRAM tend to be a lot more supportive in that sense, and maybe they form a team around one rider's chances. I think sometimes it's better if you can have a couple of options for the win, and let a competitive nature within a team be fostered as well. But I mean, yeah, it's easy to say on the outside, but certainly Ella Harris winning will do them no harm whatsoever for the start of the 2020 season.
Well, by the time we next meet, Het Nieuwsblad will have come and gone. And I think for a lot of people, that's when it really feels like the season has started properly. I don't want to be too Eurocentric, but it is a great it is a great race, and I'm looking forward to that. I'll be there actually at Het Nieuwsblad, so I'll bring something back from there, whatever happens. Stick a rock if you like, yeah, if that's what you fancy. It's local to you, Orla. Will you make it over to Het Nieuwsblad?
Local.
You know, it's just around the corner.
I love that. Everything on the other side of the English Channel now is
probably
local
more local to
me.
Us, isn't it?
It probably is, actually.
I think it's probably quicker from here.
I'm not going to Google Maps that just to see.
I would say it'd be a 3.5 hour drive from Amsterdam to Ghent.
That is basically getting across London, really, isn't it? So it's probably about as local as anything in London used to be. I'll try to make it there. I'll try to make it. It's the constant juggling of
not putting you under pressure,
two children
worry.
And
yeah,
work
you put
me
on
the
spot.
You have put me on the spot. Yeah, like you're not good enough if you haven't gone to Ghent. Why haven't you done it, Orla?
Just nearby, local,
on your doorstep.
We could make a little camper van weekend out of it, I guess. Get Casper the camper van out. We'll have a think. I'll consult the family. I'll consult the boss.
And you're off to to Colombia.
I'm going to Colombia.
Which is
yeah,
far more exotic.
Well, yeah, for 2 weeks in Colombia, tour of Colombia, the men's race, and then a trip to Alvaro Hodges' house in Medellin, and I'll be going to Strada Bianchi as well. So hopefully, bring something back there, which is an excellent race. I'm really looking forward to being out there.
One last year, but Annemiek van Vleuten, wasn't it?
Yes.
Strada Bianchi. And so by then, we'll maybe have seen some of these big guns firing.
Yeah.
And have a better sense of who is going well. Exactly. Right. Well, thank you very much for this month, Rose.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Orla.
Thank you both.